Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
All right, you're very welcome along to our Saturday panel. Today we're looking at the release this week of the ESRI report on the inter-county game. It's entitled Playing Senior Inter-County Gaelic Games, Experiences, Realities and Consequences, and it is the most comprehensive study ever undertaken on the life of an inter-county player. 53106 is the text number, live on all our social channels as well, offtheball.com, youtube.com/offtheball, Facebook and Twitter as well. We'd love to get your input and your thoughts on the report this week. In studio, we have All-Ireland winning hurlers. He is now. Congratulations, Seamus Hickey. First time you've been in with us since.
Yeah, I'm going to attach that permanently to my name. Yeah.
Well, no, you insisted that you wouldn't come in unless you were referred to at all times.
The terms of coming in were fairly strict, yeah.
Also, chairperson of the GPA and really here in that role this afternoon, Leitrim footballer Emily Mulligan. And also we have Ger Ryan, who was one of the GEA's representatives on the oversight committee that worked with the ESRI on this report. And Dr. Eilish Kelly, senior research officer with the ESRI and one of the report's authors. Eilish, you were with us, 15, 16 months ago at this stage to launch the report and encourage every inter-county player to take part. Now that it's done, now that you have it in front of you here and it's a big old beast that's up on almost 300 pages when it's fully printed out, do you feel that this is the comprehensive analysis you wanted of what it is to be an inter-county player?
Is the client's best place to answer that question? More so than I. No, I think we did all we could do, I think. We started off conducting the workshops with the players because obviously GAA is quite a unique sport. Mm. So players had to be obviously the group that had to drive the piece of work. So as I said, we conducted workshops in each of the provinces. From that then we designed the questionnaire and that was administered to all 2016 players last summertime. So yeah, a lot of work went into that side of it in terms of getting the response rate. So thanks to yourselves. GPA team reps have a big role to play in that as well, and obviously to the players themselves. So yeah, we were very happy. We just got over about a 54% response rate, which is good for this group of individuals, age cohort, never mind that they're Gaelic players and obviously have got a lot of time commitments as it is. So then it was about analysing the data to address the three objectives, and that's what we've produced.
So the main findings out of the report: inter-county players, and probably the one that's garnered the headlines, committing up to 31 hours per week. Over half feel that the commitment at times is too much. Generally, players aren't sleeping enough. Quite often, they're playing while injured. They're missing work because of injuries. But all in all, Seamus, the majority of players are still glad to be inter-county players. Like, I guess nothing in this is overly surprising, but now you have a piece of work that is grounded in the science, whereas previously, when every conversation we had around inter-county football was on anecdotal evidence.
Correct, and that's exactly, and that is the fundamental difference in this. So, and again, from the Gaelic players' interactions with thousands of players, and that membership changes year on year as guys leave the panel, guys come into the panel. We've had this interaction with them. We've seen guys in various stages of the professional careers, educational careers, returning to education, changing jobs. We've seen it at all that different stages, and the pressures that they've kind of encountered while playing the inter-county sport. But it has been largely anecdotal up until now. We've done our own research independently. But I suppose what we were after with partnering with the ESRI on this was, you know, one of the most reputable institutions in the country to put their weight behind any sort of findings to come out of this. So when you're talking about like the raw numbers in this, it is quite surprising. And this is from a player's body that has been in day-to-day contact with players. But I myself, when I sat down to do the survey, when I actually totted up the hours, I was surprised myself.
Right.
And then, you know, I'm in the latter, you know, 30s and above age bracket. And, you know, what has come out of the report is, I suppose, we do have naturally more commitments and stuff like that. So it was
startling. What is the 31 hours made up of then? When you were totting up the hours?
It was travel. It was definitely travel. So a lot of it was from work. I work predominantly in Limerick, but can be in Cork a lot of the time. So that surprised me a huge amount. A lot of it then in terms of food preparation and stuff like that I wouldn't have ever considered physio. I never counted that as part of my. But like realistically, when you're taking an hour and a half of a lunch break to try and get across town to make sure your hamstring doesn't fall apart in the middle of a game, that's stuff that we actually barely even take into consideration. So it's cumulative. It all adds together. And while it's not surprising. The sheer volume of it is surprising in when you tot it all up. And to your point, then one of the real positives out of the report is that the motivation to play hasn't changed. And yes, it's demanding, and yes, it's a commitment that we choose freely to do. And it's important that, you know, nobody at the in January tells you you're going to play intercounty this year. By the way, just do whatever you have to do to, you know, to make up for that. It's a choice at the beginning of the year. You weigh these things up, and you go for it. So, what it takes to do it is probably, and you know, it is increasing. And I think even Michael Fenley said during the week,
31 hours, Emlyn, a week, and that's on non-game weeks. As it turns out, when we get into this. Game weeks, it's actually far more straightforward. It's around half that. It goes back to championship structure, too much training, not enough games. You filled in the report, you were here at the launch. What did you take from it?
Yeah, no more than Seamus there. When I seen the results of it, obviously, you know, you're intrigued till I was kind of counting up my hours during the week, what or where I spend them. Like, normally, you think if you're training, you might only spend 2 hours. You're looking at here and there. But as Seamus said, like, in terms of, I suppose, a lot of it too is like mental preparation. Like, you're putting in some hours mentally that, like, if you've, especially if you have a game or, like, the minute you get up that day, mentally, all you're thinking about is that game. Like, to me, that's as much hours put into getting your best performance as it is in jumping into a car. But the travel is absolutely huge as well, from the minute you leave your house to being there maybe an hour earlier to get extra work done, to get your physio work done, to train, to get your food, to get home. You're talking 7-8 hours a night some nights, depending on every player's different circumstances, whether they're in Dublin or whether they're back in Sligo where I am. It just depends. It is so time-consuming, obviously, but at the end of the day, we're not forced to do it. And I think the biggest positive is that the percentage that came back saying that players are still willing to do it and don't regret committing to county football. Because at the end of the day, I'm sitting here because of it. Seamus is sitting here because of what we've put into our county. And there have been great benefits out of it for myself as well. So it's very hard to give out of it, but they're very interesting results in terms of that aspect of it.
We'll touch on some of the aspects because there's a huge amount in this. And Ger, we had your colleague in the GAA, Fergal McGinn, with us about 15 months ago. Player welfare officer saying at the time it was giving the GAA a good chance to look at the intercounty game and then take the good bits but also look at the possibility of putting in structures and policy for the bad bits. It's very early days. I'm sure you're going to meet in the coming weeks as to what you can do. I guess this is a huge tool now to be able to go to county boards and say we have definitive proof that a lot of what's going on isn't really within the ethos of what we want the GAA and the intercounty game to be.
Well, I think it offers a tremendous opportunity to use the evidence here for the overall improvement of the intercounty game. There are an awful lot of positives in it. I think a lot of the work that has been going on in the GAA recently has been about improving all aspects in terms of club to intercounty, in terms of the games to training ratio, and we see the reduced hours commitment there, and that can be a help. But I think the key thing here is that we now have evidence, and we need to go and consider that. The report was published earlier this week, and I think there's a real commitment. We had the president and the Ortsdura Hoare at the launch. I think they're very committed to considering this evidence and putting in place plans that will address the issues that need to be addressed, but also build on all the positives that are in here around the commitment, the desire of players to stay competing and being involved at this level, and how do we address the issues in that context. So it's not about being presented with a massive problem, it's about being presented with really an opportunity to use the evidence we have here to improve the GAA. And I think there's a desire on the part of county boards, a desire on behalf of Central Council, the national committees who are relevant to this, to work together with the players to address the challenges that are here.
And have you a timeline in place? Would you like a situation before next season's championship starts where you have some clear regulations?
Well, I don't think, I think there are two things there. Number one, I don't think we can put a timeline in place within 3 or 4 days of having looked at this without people having time to consider it in detail. And it's not necessarily about regulations either. I think this is about working together. And I think one of the points that has been made during the week, this is also a challenge to managers to look at this, to all stakeholders to look at the evidence in here. So it's not necessarily about regulation. It's about what is in the best interest of the player and what is in the best interest of our games and what's in the best interest of remembering the fact that these are club players as well and clearly still want to play with their clubs. So if you as a manager are looking at this report, and I'd like to see managers looking at it, you're going to say, well, does it make sense for a player to be travelling as much as he is? And what can I do to improve that? So these things are all about choices, ultimately. And you have to say, well, if I'm forcing players, because of the regime we need to put in place, to travel too much,
is that affecting them in another way that isn't to the advantage of the team? Mm-hmm. So this is all about challenge, it's about choice, it's about looking. And we have data here, and we've got to find a way of using that data effectively. So to mm-hmm. say that we're going to do something in 3 weeks, or we're going to bring in regulations or any of that, I don't think would be the most sensible response at this time. It's digest mm-hmm. the report first, give people, all stakeholders, because there are a lot of stakeholders here, give them all a chance to digest and consume what's in here, and then formulate a coherent and reasoned and collaborative response to it.
Seamus, from a GPA point of view, would you like to see, so this is a starting point, and that you now have the figures, maybe you can return to this in 3 or 4 years, and if nothing has changed, then maybe you do look at certain regulations being put in place, because
I wouldn't be waiting 3 or 4 years for any of this.
Right.
So like, to be fair, this is like, for what I see, this is a great body of evidence that hasn't been collected before, jointly by the GA and the GPA. This is now, I would say, fuel for, you know, thinking about sustainability in our games. And how, like, we have to decide then, what do we want our games to look like in I would say 3-4 years time, 5 years time, because how much it has changed in the last 5 years, and the previous 5 years when Emlyn and myself came into the game, like it has changed dramatically even that. So like, this is you know, a tool that we can use to craft sustainability in our games. The measures we take won't take 3 or 4 years to implement. I think that we're already actively looking at and working on what, like, we've changed the championship structures dramatically in both codes this year. We have to review what that has done to the championship.
Well, that's one of the more interesting things, that this was 2016. We actually have, 25 more games.
Correct.
And highly competitive games, as you know, from, say, a Munster Senior Hurling Championship, and the effect that has.
And when you're talking about this as a starting point, and we were talking outside just before we came in, was, you know, we need to check the temperature regularly as to how this is progressing. Has the changes in championship structures improved this scenario, or has it actually... Has it been detrimental? How has it had, like, the...
What's your sense, having experienced it?
So, listen, I love the Hurling Championship this year. It was fairly full on from the beginning of the league right the way through to the championship. The April club month for me didn't, you know, and we've done a good bit of work in the GPA looking at what April turned out to be for a lot of counties. It was a complete mixed bag. And that in the middle of the it was smack bang in the middle of the intercounty season, when you were actually training for part of it and then competing in club games, but then you're straight back then to prepare for a championship game that was on the first or second week of May. So it was a roller coaster you didn't get off for quite a while. The only breather we actually got was we missed the Munster final. You know, we actually got a breather.
Yeah.
Which is weird to say. And we got off that and straight back on it then against the Christy Ring champion, or the McDonagh Cup champions. You know, so it was fairly full on, but we were playing games, and like, I think, as you said rightly, when you're in a game week, there's a taper, and the training load is down, the training volume is down, your gym work and stuff like that is restricted, and it's generally individual as opposed to group. So like, a lot of those things were positive.
But I do wonder actually, so, all right, the actual, say, time away from home is lessened on match week, but something you looked at here was mental health and general happiness and how much time people are spending with their friends and their family. I can't imagine actually on a match week that is much different. You're not saying, well, I've no training,
it occupies your mind almost totally. And like Emily was saying, the mental preparation, it is all-encompassing when competition comes around. But then a significant part of the report, and I don't think it was probably highlighted enough, but is the club experience for the players. So that has been dramatically affected by the changes in championship structures. And, you know, what would players say now then compared to what they said in the middle of last year, or, you know, because the structures that have been changed have been fairly dramatic. What we do find is that, you know, the younger cohort of our membership are still on, you know, over 68% of them playing for 4 or more teams. That's the reality of it. But, you know, can we change that? Is there something we can do? Because is that sustainable at the end of the day, to have so much pressure on such a what is an increasingly large proportion of our membership? We've got conflicting competitions, we've got conflicting demands from managers. So there's multiple stakeholders, and when you're talking about, I suppose, just going back to the original point of the, in 3-4 years, are we going to take a look at this and see if it's changed? I don't think we can wait that long,
right,
because of what has come out of this.
One of the parts of this that may be most difficult, and they don't have a collective voice, I don't think, but you mentioned the inter-county manager in all this, and that has come up a lot. They don't really answer to anybody. So inter-county players, and they have a voice through the GPA, the county boards, answer to Croke Park. I know inter-county managers should answer to county boards, but by and large, an inter-county manager comes in, he wants to make an impression. He's probably looking at what the Limerick Hurlers did this year, and he's picked up certain parts of it, and he wants to drive it. And there's nobody to say stop. How do you get them to buy into what's in this? How do you get them to realise the players have been pushed too far?
Just on that, I suppose we were speaking outside in relation to that, and we were saying like a majority of county managers nowadays, like they're in there for a year, 2 years. So they're not looking for the player welfare, as we were saying, in 5 years' time, how that player is, you know. And like we just spoke, was one of the main things we said was managers have to look at that, like, you know, and they're probably the main person in control, especially in terms of the travel and them sort of circumstances, whether, let's say, for our my own example, if we're in Carrick and Shannon, let's say, this time of year, starting in November for December, like, there's no need for lads coming from Dublin, coming, like, you know, you could have a session up here, a session there, like, and they're in control of that, like, and, like, it is important. It's easier for the likes of myself to come maybe to a manager and say, well, this is my situation, maybe it's easier for me being more experienced, but it's very hard for a younger lad coming into a county panel to go straight in and tell the manager, well, I'm not driving up and down, I feel tired or I feel fatigue and putting too many hours in. And there's a balance there that needs to be got. And the best managers in this day and age are the players' manager, the man that will speak to the players. Like, and sometimes you have managers that come into these jobs, and as you said there, they're just driven by success and they're driven by all they want to do is win, and it's forget about everything else. But there has to be a balance there that the player welfare comes number one. But again, you need players strong enough to be able to stand up to them and basically give their example of, well, I can't do this or I can't do that. And
a manager, it's a very hard thing to do for a player.
It is, you know, and everyone, and more than that, it's all in the personality. And I'd feel myself, and I'd be strong enough to say to a manager, like last year in circumstances, obviously having bad knees or operations over the year, I would have to explain to a manager, like, I can't train tonight. You know, I had to basically train maybe one night instead of two nights and such, but he was very understanding in terms of to say, well, you take a night off tonight, but then you could meet another fella that's like, here, you're gone, out the door with you, you know. And again, it comes down to maybe your county you're involved with. If you're Dublin or somewhere, that mightn't happen. Maybe with weaker counties, they haven't as much to pick from, that it's very hard to let players go, you know.
Well, one of the things that has, again, came up at the launch was the suggestion by the Youth Toronto to consider whether we should have a player welfare manager focused on these issues at a national level. And presumably that would lead to local player welfare managers as well, who can independently represent the interests of players and drive this engagement with managers. Because I think this presents a real opportunity to engage with managers. You know, there has been and there's ongoing engagement with managers around the club, county, balance, around the fixtures programs and so on. And there, I think, will be some amendments based on what's been done this year. Let's say in the hurling championship, there's going to be an extra week in each of the provinces. So I think there's ongoing engagement there. There's a desire to improve. And as Seamus says, I don't think anybody will be waiting 3 or 4 years for action out of this. So I think through looking at how can we represent player welfare better, there will be opportunities here to engage with managers. I would hope managers would look at this and say, what can I learn out of this? Because the one thing, like, we have a lot of enlightened managers out there. I think it's important to say that.
Sure.
But equally, we have to encourage all managers to think in terms of the player, and there's plenty of very useful data in here, I think, that they can consider and work with their county boards and work with their players to see how that can be turned to their advantage.
I just wonder, Jair, and Seamus might pick up on this, so you're saying maybe that it doesn't necessarily need to be rules and regulations, and you're talking about encouraging managers.
Yes.
If the GPA will be looking actually that there is more regulation of inter-county managers, now that you have the raw data, you have the facts to go back and say, instead of encouraging them to read this, that actually managers need to be brought together 4 times a year, need to be answerable, need to be pushed on why they're doing this. You can get the data straight back from the players as to what's happening in each camp.
Now, I think the primary kind of tool you use in changing anything is probably educating and exposing people to evidence, or, you know, at least, you know, information that they haven't been privy to before. A lot of, and I suppose it's probably something that hasn't been known a whole pile, but a lot of the work that we've done in engaging squads in the last number of years with our regional development officers in the GPA has been, we'd always try anyway and have an engagement one-to-one with the managers. So our games, our player development officers are, you know, in Munster, Leinster, Connacht and Ulster. And when we're meeting squads of players, we're also trying to meet the manager and say, listen, how do you feel this setup is? You know, what do you think, you know, in terms of player welfare? How do you feel? What's your approach to it? And we've had really, really good conversations with a lot of very, very good guys. But like the turnover of those is significant. Mm. And that's the nature of the game. But what is frustrating, I suppose, what I see an awful lot in the role in the GPA is this hands up in the air, we can't do anything about it. The manager has decided to do this. He's called four or five sessions, and at the far side of it, the county board are complaining about the cost of preparing teams. That manager has called five collective sessions in the week. You're paying expenses for those five collective sessions. No player has called those sessions. They're going to them because they've been required to by the manager. Mm. So there has to be a level of accountability all the way down. I'm talking about even from ourselves in the Gaelic Players Association to act on what's in this report and to liaise with our players to ensure that, you know, the best, I suppose, circumstances or the best levels of preparation have been put in without this whole, you know, we're all victim of a runaway train here. Like, I don't believe in that for a second.
We've got a good mix, actually, probably in the two players we have here, in that, Seamus, you've just won an All-Ireland and you're in a stage in your life, probably one of the older players, not the oldest player in the squad. You got a couple of kids. And Emlyn, you're playing Division 4 football where you're probably starting maybe looking for promotion and a big scalp in the Championship. Very different expectations, but probably similar enough workloads. Ailish, when you were doing this research, did you notice much of a difference between what we'd see as the traditional top counties, the players' attitude of those players, and the players at the lower rungs?
Nope. In the sense that I think when you're playing at this level of the game, you're pretty driven as an individual, so you're quite motivated. So, like, players just want to go out and perform to the best they can and get the best out of themselves or that. Obviously, there's variation in terms of what the end outcome is. So we'll say, obviously, in hurling, you have the different championship competitions. So within each playing level, there's a cup as such to work towards. Football, obviously, at the minute, it's just a Sam Maguire or that. But I think every player is driven to get the best out of themselves and to perform to the best that they can. Because, as I said, you're looking effectively at the cream of the crop, and they're highly driven individuals or that.
Does this make fairly grim reading, Jer, for the inter-county player? I see Colm Keyes writing on it today that inter-county players inter-county players look at the club, and if they had more time, they'd love to spend more time there. But generally, if they have more time right now, they want to spend it with their friends, they want to look at their careers, that really they don't want to be, the two don't look compatible at the same time.
No, I don't think that's necessarily a totally accurate interpretation of what the report says, because over half the inter-county players are saying they're happy with their arrangements with their clubs, and they are trying to balance multiple demands. So I think, I would take a positive from the fact that over half of them are there. And I think then when you look at the fact that the GA is genuinely trying to address the balance between inter-county and club games, that there is an opportunity to progress here. Like, if you take 2015 as a base point before a lot of these changes started, there will be an average of 4 extra weeks per county for club games from the time they exited the Championship. So that's progress. Now, will that be felt and will that be a benefit? And that will that be seen positively in every county immediately? No, because there's always a lag effect here. But there is progress, I believe, being made there, and there is a commitment to make further progress, and there's ongoing work and discussion across all the stakeholders on this. So I think everybody recognises the huge commitment inter-county players make, and I suppose it's difficult for them to make more of a commitment to their club, and I wouldn't expect them to do so. But it's how we achieve an effective balance that keeps the club going, that keeps the club player having a proper and effective fixtures programme. And there have been changes this year, yes, and there are some challenges. Like, for instance, there will be counties who have managed to play games in the past during the inter-county season, and that didn't really happen this year. So that's seen as a negative for them. But this is about working through those challenges and issues. And I think the GA is very focused on doing that. And I would expect that these benefits will be seen down the road.
Ailish.
Yeah, so just to come in on the club, because, I mean, it's an important component of it, in the sense that we're asked to look at what is the impact on players' involvement with the club or that as well. So in terms of Colm's article, Yeah, he's picking up on certain aspects of the report, but I mean, there's more angles on the club in there than just those specific points. But just in terms of where players were asked or where they wanted to spend more time on, no, the club didn't rank up at the top. I mean, players are saying their professional career, because at the end of the day, they have to be able to pay their bills and all the rest. Secondly, family, friends, who's giving them the main support in terms of actually being out there on the pitches? It's the family and friends. So they're saying, yeah, we want to be able to spend more time. So it's not that the club isn't important, because when we asked them what the main downsides was, their ability to actually play with their club was identified as the third main point. Then in terms of that, like, you know, players, would they want to spend more time with their club if it was at the expense of their inter-county career? Coming back to the fact that these individuals are driven, they want to play for the best that they can. Look at all the, I suppose, the performance measures and supports that they're getting at that inter-county level. If you're a driven sports person, of course you want to be able to access those to allow you to get the best out of yourself. So at the minute, obviously, that's taking place at the inter-county scene. Does that mean that you should see that filter down to the club? Not necessarily so, because there's cost implications and there's all the other health injury implications as well.
Sure.
That those sort of commitments are at the inter-county level will result happening at the club level as well, if you see that trickle down to the club level.
When we're looking at the relationship between the county and the clubs, and something that I would see has been positive and we'd see has been positive in the GPA, especially in the last number of years, is the willingness to actually change. So we've actually seen quite a number of changes in the fixtures, and I suppose even the motivation was very clear from the outgoing Ard Siúrthóir what the changes were aimed at with the introduction of club months and, we'll say, the change of competition structures. Now, we didn't particularly agree with the football competition structures because of the benefited, a significant minority of the counties that competed in the football championships, and we as players didn't, you know, feel that was the best change to make. But it has gone through now, and we're part of the review process to see how that has gone for the year. But the fact that we're willing to actually change things with the view to try and make things better has to be seen as a positive. But then what Gerard was saying is, when we're talking about the different stakeholders involved, it's really important now that the season is just freshly closed, that we have a significant and meaningful review of how did this go. We've made changes here. We had April reserve for club. How did that go? Let's take a real honest look at that.
And is that meeting planned?
But it's happening. So, like, Fergal McGill, who wasn't in here previously, is leading that effort on behalf of the GAA, and the GPA are involved in it. You have multiple stakeholders from managers involved. So it's important that review is done in a very meaningful way to say, yes, it's great that we're making changes, let's make them, but let's see if we can actually tweak those changes to improve the lot of our players, the games, the clubs. Because, and I think I'm at pains to say this, every inter-county GAA player plays for their club. We cannot play inter-county without being a member of a club in the Gaelic Athletic Association. So we will always return to play with our clubs, because otherwise we're not eligible. And, you know, there's a huge love for the club game in our membership. And you see that even with some of our members part of the Club Players Association, who, you know, we've been speaking to more and more in an effort to kind of have this unified players perspective to feed into these different topics, so that when we're reviewing them and when we're looking at them from a macro level, we're taking into account the voice of those who are impact directly between the four lines playing the games.
But it's still hard to see any way of managing that 4 to 6 month inter-county season and having players going back to their clubs during that. That's gone.
I would agree. Our own association view of that would be that, you know, we can work with that. The calendar can be reviewed to actually look at that and look at the inter-county season. And having the club, I just don't feel the club championship gets the respect it deserves at the moment. Playing two games in the middle of a championship season where, you know, our own club team now are playing tomorrow in the club championship. We play two games in April. We are a vastly different team now to what we were in April. Like, I struggle then to marry that. You know, were those two games meaningful? Did we give them everything we could?
Thinking about a Munster championship game in 3 weeks.
Like, we only get 5 games in the Limerick senior championship to try and progress our season. So, like, it's serious stuff. Are those games given the credit and, I suppose, the are they given the attention that they deserve? I don't believe they are.
On the effect on players' mental health, it said, while the players' life satisfaction scores in line with the national average, they recorded lower levels of mental well-being, particularly when compared to individuals of similar age. Like, Emily, when you think about the peak of training season and championship season, are you noticeably more stressed in life? Like, is it a trying time?
I wouldn't say more stressed. I think no more than for any inter-county footballer trying to play at the best level, that's the moment you want to be involved in, is that time of year. I suppose some players really, really enjoy it, whereas it might get the better of other players and they find it a tough time. Maybe the pressure's coming from family, friends, from no more club mates, from county boards, everything. But for me personally, it's the time of the year, that's when you want to be involved, is the lead up to a big game, knowing that, well, I suppose for ourselves playing in front of 10,000-15,000, that's the game you want to be involved in, and you cherish that pressure. Again, listen, it can be mentally straining for some, but that's part and parcel of it. And I suppose, listen, like, you know, it's that's one thing, and I suppose playing inter-county football gives you that. And we were speaking earlier on about who's for going on in life in terms of jobs, in terms of pressures. It gives you a great foundation for that, because you're put into environments that not every person on the street is used to. But it's divided, but on a personal level myself, it's the time of year you want to be involved in, is leading up to them big games.
Eilish, that lower level of mental well-being in comparisons to people who aren't playing inter-county football, did you find the reasons for that? Is it the pressure? Is it the time pressures that are put on players?
So there's two kind of components to it as such. So first of all, we had a little bit more, so we used the World Health Organization Mental Wellbeing Index to calculate these measures for players. So that's made up of five questions. On all the five questions, inter-county players scored lower than the general population. The one that stood out the most, I suppose, was players not waking up the next day feeling fresh and rested. So that was particularly low. So it's coming back to the sleep, because obviously one of the main findings in the report is that, you know, almost 50% of players aren't getting the recommended 8 to 10 hours sleep. So not only does that impact on performance, but it's also impacting on players' mental well-being and also recovery. I mean, sleep is often overlooked in terms of recovery mechanism. So there's been a lot of, again, ways and means of being brought into the games to improve players' performance, and you have one natural remedy as such in terms of sleep, and it would appear to be being overlooked by some counties and players and that. So sleep is one element of it, but there was other findings that would maybe highlight that, you know, the demands are, we'd say, putting strain in terms of players' mental well-being. So, you know, the high proportion feeling that the time commitment involved is too much, not getting enough time with their family, friends. So some very interesting findings came from the workshops themselves, where players spoke about, you know, not getting the downtime to spend on hobbies, being role models 24/7, and also just that whole being in the public eye, being in the media's attention, always being focused on. At the end of the day, they're amateur individuals, and gone are the days where you might have had a good game on a Sunday and the local paper made reference on Thursday and then it was forgotten about again. You have social media, you have everything else going on now. Is players are not getting that mental space to forget about the game and move on and focus on the next game. So it's there on their minds the whole time.
That has to be, I guess, a big concern and a big opportunity for the GPA, Seamus, because you've spent so much time and so much resources on mental health to get this raw data about the differences between inter-county players and the general public, and stuff that you can actually have an effect on. It's simply, for most inter-county players, it's impossible to get 8 to 10 hours sleep if you're travelling down to Mayo or to Leitrim for inter-county training on a Tuesday night and you're not getting back home until midnight and you should be up for work again at 7:30. Yeah. It's simply not possible. That you have to drive through some sort of change here that basis alone.
So we've obviously spent an awful lot of time in the last number of years, especially in making our members aware of the mental health drain, I suppose, of playing to continue, and the need to talk and to actually come out and to talk to somebody.
We don't actually talk about that. We obviously focus quite a lot on the bigger issues, such as gambling problems or alcohol problems. It's actually just being an inter-county footballer itself. Yeah, it's
a lot of the guys, especially with young males, and trying to get them to communicate and to actually get them to offload some of the things they're going through. That's a kind of a generation shift. We're trying to change attitudes and behaviours in a lot of ways towards mental health in those areas. Yes, we've and thank God we've been there for a number of our members who've gone down the road of addiction, whether that be gambling, whether it be alcohol, You know, and we've helped with guys who've had, you know, clinical depression, and we've been there for them. And that's they're some of the cases that for me, you know, I'm probably most proud of being part of the GPA and the life changing effects we've had on those cases. But the general population, when we're talking about our membership, trying to make them more aware of mental health and giving them more serious consideration. You're looking at the likes of, you know, it's slowly kind of creeping in, I think, more and more in the wider sporting consciousness when you're looking at the likes of Joe Schmidt and he's talking about the mind gym and he's talking about mentally, you know, preparing yourself and taking time to actually assess where you are mentally. That's slowly creeping into, I suppose, the mainstream consciousness. But you know, for us to make change to affect that, when you're talking about sleep, sleep is directly related to travel. Travel is directly related to sleep. That's directly related to the number of group sessions that you have. You know, so I like there is other groups, and like we were talking about amateur organisations, there isn't a huge amount to compare what we do across the globe. But like, I'm not a massive fan of the NCAA and how they treat student athletes in America. But what they do have is a very well, I suppose, regulated guideline on practice hours during the week. The number of hours that you can actually, there's a maximum cap on that. If you break that, there's severe penalties. And you see programs getting what the death penalty over in the States for breaking regulations around, well, primarily a lot of it is around the financial side of you know, players accepting money to play. But there's been significant penalties handed down for breaking the number of regulated practice hours. Because these are student athletes and they're supposed to be students first, athletes second. Mm. We're amateur athletes, but you know, we seem to be athletes first and athletes and amateur second. So, you know, the commitment to regulation, the commitment to guidelines and commitment to how we prepare and how we want our games to look, whether we're actually, are we committed to them being amateur? The GPA, we're committed to the amateur ethos because, you know, we're our players tell us we are, to be honest. We survey our players every year and ask them for their attitudes.
Is that changing at all?
It is changing over the years. It is. There's no question it is. And the barometer that we take every year changes, but it's always fundamentally fixed on, if this game goes professional, and the county boundaries are deleted, and there's going to be a reduction in teams, are you for it? And most of them say, no, I don't want to play for Dublin if I'm from Cork, just because it's professional. So those attitudes are still maintain our commitment to the amateur ethos. But if we are committed to the amateur ethos, let's be committed to it. And let's give more energy and resources to sustaining it.
Yeah, that's a big old question for the GPA and for the GEA to deal with then over the coming months. The amateur ethos, when you now see it written down clearly, there's not much amateur about committing 31 hours a week to something.
Yeah, well, it is a significant commitment and it is at the upper end of it. And I think that's part of the challenge the data presents. It really sends a strong message about time, and there isn't time for all of the things that somebody needs to do to have a proper balanced lifestyle and while remaining an amateur player. And the GA obviously is hugely committed to maintaining the amateur status. It's a core part of the ethos of the association. And I don't see any demand to change that, and I don't see any need to change that. But what we have here now is the opportunity maybe to reinforce that amateur ethos in terms of looking at some of the changes and improvements we can make out of having this real data and moving away from anecdotal evidence or maybe opinion-based approaches. Mm. We have that opportunity now. I think everybody involved is willing to take forward that. There's also an opportunity here for further research, whether that's longitudinal research in relation to individuals, qualitative-based research, but looking at individual programs, individual opportunities to study the changes that are made and are agreed and see are they having the desired impact, and protecting everybody in the long run, including the fundamental ethos of the association.
Yeah, even looking through it again this morning, like something that strikes me straight away that you would want further research on is the amount of players who are playing while injured, or the amount of players who are taking medication,
yes,
or something so that they can go on and actually play.
That's universal across sports.
Yeah,
that's universal across sport, unfortunately, and you'll actually see that in an awful lot of different sports, whether it's football in the Premiership or whether you're looking at professional sports across the water. Players want to play. And I think the primary, for us anyway, the primary motivation is always to try and remove from the player the pressure to make decisions that shouldn't be in their hands. So whether that's
all, this still comes back to the manager.
Yeah,
and if you've
it comes back to the environment or the whole intercounty ecosystem that we're existing in. To put it squarely on the manager is probably refining it to too fine a point. It is the wider responsibility of the leadership in the GAA, the county boards, and the managers to actually be working towards. I suppose we're all singing off the same hymn sheet here. Like, we all want the same thing, and here are the guidelines to achieve that.
Mm. We got to wrap it, Eilish, to finish up.
Yeah, no, just follow up on what Seamus is saying there. This report wasn't about one comparison. So we'll say teams in different divisions saying, "Oh, look what the Division One footballers doing, we need to do that." Or secondly, it wasn't about blame. It was about documenting what the situation is. And I suppose for all involved, not just the two associations, but the whole way down from county managers, county board secretaries to players, to identify, are we happy with the direction that the game is going in? And if we continue going the way we are we happy with where we're going to end up? So that's just giving all involved an opportunity to look at that.
Yeah, great stuff. And it's the type of report I think we're going to come back to time and time again over the next year. My only advice is, if you're printing it out in the middle of a crowded office on a Thursday afternoon, it's not going to go down well with anybody at 296 pages.
The word
not
executive,
good for the environment
the word executive
either.
Summary was made for this.
Thanks a million for coming in, Eilish, Jer, Seamus, Emlyn. Thanks a lot. We were very tight in time, but there's a huge amount to go through. And as I say, I'm sure we'll get into the specific details over the coming weeks and months as well. It'll all be up on offtheball.com. We're talking football next. Kenny Cunningham will be joining us in studio.
Off the Ball on Newstalk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.